We should be focusing on the things that we're really, really good at, using our strengths to every day, because that's, you know, it requires less energy. It's where we can be really super effective. So absolutely, our strengths are our superpowers, and recognizing those is the key to development and growth, I think.
It's time for a new era of communication in the swine industry, one that you can get the latest updates while commuting or driving to farms. Here, you will have the brightest minds of the global swine industry in your pocket. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. AB Vista, new nutritional perspectives and novel enzyme applications to drive pig production. AccuFast, the best way to predict the future is to create it. Start creating your future today at AccuFastSwine.com. Adiseo provides programs and services to help producers achieve their targets in a high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. Healthy Farms by Bioverse, your manure management experts. Digesterom Finish from DSM Firminish can help your pigs finish faster. Get better efficiency with improved profitability with Digesterom Finish. Trow Nutrition North America. Everything we do is driven by passion and backed by science.
Hello and welcome to the Swine Podcast show. My name is Daniel Linhares and I'll be your host for today, where we're going to start a series on leadership and time management series. And today it's my pleasure to introduce you to Nell. She is a consultant, an executive coach consultant in the area of leadership. And welcome to the show, Nell. Can you please introduce yourself to the audience and talk a little bit about your background?
Sure. Thanks, Daniel. It's really lovely to be here and I'm delighted to be invited. So thank you for having me. Yes, so I'm in the UK in Nottingham. So if your listeners can picture England right in the middle, famous for Robin Hood. But I come from South London, so I don't have a family background in agriculture. I grew up right in the middle of the city, and in London, we have a movement of city farms. So my first introduction to agriculture was on these very small urban farms that were built and designed to help urban children understand about how to grow food and how to look after animals. So that was my first introduction to agriculture. And I think that left me with a love of animals, a love of horses, rabbits, you know, chickens particularly. And eventually I studied the sciences at school and then went to university in Nottingham. So I left London to go to university in Nottingham to study biochemistry. But the campus that I was studying on had a very agricultural bent, I suppose, as agriculture courses on the same campus. So it was easy for me to take lots of courses in animal nutrition, and then ultimately to that led to a doctorate in poultry nutrition, and particularly looking at cereals for poultry. I did some teaching and some academic research in various institutions, and then I joined AB Vista in 2010. So some of your listeners might recognize AB Vista as a supplier of feed enzymes and other feed additives. I think they are well known to this podcast. So I worked there for a number of years in a research role, particularly looking at poultry, but also pigs and development of enzyme products for those species. And then I went to the parent company of AB Vista, which is AB Agri, to look at alternative proteins. I did a bit of work there, some data analysis projects, and moved around the parent company in different roles, all technical R&D. And my most recent role was as innovation director for AB Agri, looking at our innovation pipeline across all the species that we were looking at. And that was until last year. And last year, I started out independently as a consultant and coach.
There's a better way to finish your pigs, and it's called Digesterom Finish. Digesterom Finish provides higher feed acceptance, leading to improved digestibility, so you get a more efficient finish. Made with all natural ingredients, Digesterom Finish is a three-way win for producers through better animal well-being, enhanced economic performance, and improved sustainability. Digesterone Finish can help you get more pounds in less time. So why wait for your finish? Learn more at dsm.com/finish.
So today we're an executive coach, right?
Absolutely, absolutely.
So tell us a little bit about that, what people come asking you to help them with, and what kind of leaders you have been working with.
So because of my background, most of my clients and most of the people I coach come from an agri-food background. You know, that's naturally where my networks are. And I think people recognize my background, you know, in those industries. Coaching is agnostic. It's a skill that can be used, you know, with anyone. It's not industry or function specific. But I think broadly, clients come to coaching for sort of two broad reasons, really. The first one being they want to work on their own career development. So they don't know quite what to do next, quite what role might be available to them next, what they want to do. And they want to do some planning and some working on their options, really. And then there's another sort of broad coaching agenda around I have an issue that I want to work on and can you help me? So those might be things like I've taken a new role and I want to have impact in my new role, or I've had a piece of feedback on something I want to work on, can you help me with that? So it's usually sort of broad career development or dealing with particular issues that are present for that person. I think there's a couple of or a few coaching topics that I see quite commonly with people that come from a science background. And those are things like, you know, you will know this, Daniel, in the academic world, it's quite hierarchical. So if you're a scientist and you're in an academic background or in an academic role, your career progression is quite transparent. And if you move over to the commercial sector, often it's not so transparent. So development opportunities can be more difficult to see in the commercial sector. So that's one that a sort of specific agenda I see quite commonly. I think another one is that people come to me with, you know, my organization is expecting more from me. How do I act on that? So, for example, people on their second or third move. So, say they're in an R&D role in a feed company, for example, or any company where they might have an R&D function. The more leadership you take, the more you might be moving away from the science day to day. That's quite a common agenda as well. So my company is expecting me to take on more and more leadership, taking me away from the science. How do I work around that? Do I feel comfortable with that? How do I find strategies to work like that? Is that acceptable to me in my career journey? And there's one last one, which is quite common as well, around loneliness in leadership. You know, the further you go upwards in a hierarchy, the less people there are that are doing the same job as you. So, you know, in a senior leadership team, you know, you might be the only scientist. So how do I interact with people around me who might come from different backgrounds? So, yeah, those are some sort of common types of coaching agendas and some specific ones that I often see with scientists.
Right. Well, thanks for that background. And so that's... With that, now it's time to get a little bit more in the weeds here, right? And
sure.
Understand get more technical a little bit here. And so in your website, you say that you like to invest in the development and well-being, right, of the team. Can you help us, our audience, understand how do we define well-being in the workplace and what kind of things that we can do to improve that?
Sure. I think... you know, our work and our work lives have such a massive impact on our well-being because they're such an important big part of our lives. One of the things that can, or there are a couple of things I think that can damage our well-being at work. The first one is our ability to be authentic. So, you know, if we have to be inauthentic, if we have to only bring parts of ourselves to work, that requires quite a lot of energy. You know, if we have to be something different at work than we are in the rest of our lives, that's really hard work. You know, leaving part of yourself at the door when you go to work is hard. So I think working on authenticity, and that's not just to do with the individual, that's to do with the environment in which they are working as well. So those kind of themes around supporting authenticity, I think, is a key one. A second one is uncertainty in our work life. Can be quite stressful. And there's lots of reasons, you know, evolutionary reasons why uncertainty is stressful. And I think working on, as leaders, working on certainty with our team. So how can we improve the certainty in which our teams are working? So for example, when our organizations are going through lots of change, that can be really uncertain. We can not know the outcomes. We can, you know, worry about what's going to happen next. And as individuals, taking control over what we can control, and as leaders, providing as much certainty as possible for our teams, I think that can also really improve well-being. I think those are a couple of the top ones, Daniel.
Yeah, so if I understand right, people have got a few good coming to work and have a little bit of fun. Why not? Right. Since we're there.
And feel like they can be themselves as well. I think that's important.
Mm-hmm. And you also talk about that people should build self-awareness, identify personal values, and kind of understand their aspirations, right? Does that mean that people have a clear vision of where they want to be?
Yeah, sure. I think, you know, self-awareness is one of the most important skills and behaviors for leaders, actually. You know, being really self-aware about yourself, about what you want, about, as you say, your values, your aspirations, your passions, but also how other people see you. So understanding how the people around you see you is another really, really important part of self-awareness. You know, if you know what you value and what you want and what your strengths are, you can make really good decisions. You can make better decisions about roles to choose, activities to do, directions to take. And I think it's a really strong quality of a leader who can be self-aware, who can listen to feedback, and who can be reflective about that feedback. And coaching is something, I think, that can really support that reflective behavior. So this thing happened, or I got this feedback. How do I feel about it? What change do I need to make? Do I need to make any change? How do I move forward a bit differently and develop and grow? So I think that self-awareness, that reflective capability is really important. And yeah, coaching and, you know, mentoring, other type of interventions also support that too.
Mm-hmm. And on that, when you talk about move ahead, make progress, right? And what are examples of some strategic goals people could have to really kind of feel like they are contributing not only to their careers, but to the enterprise that they're working on.
Yeah. So do you mean as an individual?
Yeah.
I think one of the things that quite often people want to work on is impact, you know, and that's a common piece of feedback that's given, you know, you could have more impact, or it would be useful if you had more impact. And I think, so that's as an individual strategic goal, that's again quite common. So how can I go from being an individual contributor to having more impact in my organization? And I think, you know, there's so many layers to that. What does impact mean? You know, there's opportunities there to get clarity on that feedback. You know, what does that mean to you? What would being more impactful look like? And what's stopping you from doing that? What being more impactful? So I think that's sort of quite a common one for individuals that comes up.
Yeah. Because if we could say that if they are making an impact in their career, they are making an impact for their organization too, right? It's those things.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. So whether that's, you know, in a team, as an individual, on behalf of the organization, absolutely. Yeah. And what does impact mean in the role that you're in? You know, for example, if you're a scientist within an organization, maybe your impact is communicating your science really well. You know, maybe that's the impact that your organization expects you to have, for example. It might be different for somebody in a different role. So, yeah, really understanding what impact means would be important in that scenario.
Yeah. And going back a little bit, when you were talking about, you know, going to work, feeling good, being yourself, that brings a little bit also the topic of resilience, right? And so can you help us understand what is it and why it's important?
Yeah.
Be resilient in the workplace. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I think resilience is a really interesting topic. And to me, it means, you know, being able to deal well with adversity. You know, when things don't quite go the way that you hoped they would, or when a project fails, or if you get some feedback that isn't the feedback that you hoped for, you know, being able to keep going, being able to bounce back, being able to maintain your mental health during that phase, I think that's what resilience means to me. It's a really interesting topic, Daniel, for people who know about biology, because there's lots of literature about resilience in biological systems, for example, forests. And one of the things that we know is a really resilient sort of woodland ecosystem makes choices about things it needs to stop doing. So populations will die, populations will be, which will allow room for other populations to come through. And I think that's a really interesting sort of analogy, because I think being resilient means you can decide when to stop, you can decide when to rest, you can decide when to put your foot down on a particular piece of work, or, you know, when to slow down. And it's not just about persevering with adversity all the time. It's not about working really hard all the time and just keeping going, because I think there's disadvantages to that too. I think if you're very, very, you know, if you keep going against adversity all the time, that's exhausting. So it's knowing what you need to do. Again, it's this self-awareness, Daniel, you know, knowing what you need to do to maintain your own health and be able to keep going over the long term, I think.
Mm-hmm. So if I understand right, it's a little bit about taking feedback, but not taking it too personal, not crashing when those things happen, right? When you get a feedback, but also at the same time, moving to understand where your strengths are, where your superpowers are, and shifting your career to be there where you were most likely to be successful, right?
Yeah, and I think I love the language around superpower, because I think that's absolutely where we should be in our personal development, Daniel. We should be focusing on the things that we're really, really good at, using our strengths to every day, because that's, you know, it requires less energy. It's where we can be really super effective. So absolutely, our strengths are our superpowers, and recognizing those is the key to development and growth, I think.
We all have weaknesses, right? And it's not saying that we shouldn't improve, but if we focus too much, then...
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. And we all have development areas. And I think that what we need to do through our own development is make sure we're aware of them, not because we should necessarily spend all of our time trying to be good at the things we're less good at, but because we should just keep an eye on them and make sure they don't hold us back. So I think of it quite often in terms of, you know, in our school life, right back from when we're really little, really young, we are taught that, you know, if you're not good at maths, you should have maths training. You should keep going to extra classes. You should keep practicing and try and be really good at maths. And I think, you know, if you're like me, maths is never going to be my strong point. So, you know, it's better for me to focus on the things that I'm really good at. And I think we are really conditioned sometimes to think that personal development comes from focusing on the things we're not good at. Whereas, just as you said, I think it's the opposite. Our strengths are our superpowers, really. As long as our development areas aren't holding us back.
Yeah, well, talking about superpowers, how about magic list? Do you have, from what you see, do you have a magic list of essential leadership skills effective people?
Yeah, I think I think we all bring something different, right? So there is no one model of brilliant leadership or a tick box of all the skills, you know, in my view anyway. I think what we talked about earlier, the ability to be self-aware, to listen to feedback, I think those things are act on feedback, I think are really, really, really useful leadership skills. I also am a big believer in transformational leadership, and that's a term from the 70s. I think more recently you might hear it called trust and inspire. So that's a Stephen M.R. Covey term. And really what that's about believing in your teams. So believing in the people around you and their ability to do more and their ability to be successful. And I think that's a really interesting way of looking at it, because that's different from just saying, I like the people around me. It's about having a belief that the people around you can be successful. I think that's an important part of really brilliant leadership. I think the ability to delegate, and again, that's tied up in your belief about your people. You know, if you believe in your people and you trust them to deliver, you're able to delegate to them. And therefore that opens doors, that empowers them, that gives them opportunities. So I think this ability to empower the people around you believe in them and empower them is really important. I think creating feedback cultures, really strong feedback cultures, is important in leadership as well. And that can be tricky, particularly if you're starting from a low base of a feedback culture. But being able to encourage feedback in the team, model what it means to receive feedback. And I've got quite a good story of someone I was working with recently who was a very senior leader in his organization, and he was new. So he was new into the job, and he'd taken on quite a big and existing team. And there was a piece of work they needed to do. And he said, this is how we're going to do it. We're going to do this, this, and this. And I'm sure this is the way we should do it. And actually one of the senior members of his team came to him privately and said, I don't think you're right. I think this is the wrong way to do it. And he described to me, he said, I had to think about that carefully. I had to decide in that point in time whether I said, no, we're going to do it my way. But actually what he decided to do was to say to that person, okay, I think I agree with you. We'll change the plan and we'll do it your way. And I think that's a really good example of being calculated and thinking, I can listen to that feedback, and we can change our course of action. And that probably had lots of positive impacts. Like that person now knew that they could raise a challenge, and there would be no negative impact of doing that. So it improved safety in that team. That new leader probably learned in that scenario as well, learned a different way to do things, you know, broaden his understanding. And I think it probably, you know, is steps into improving that kind of feedback culture in that team. So I think that's another one. Feedback cultures and are useful. There's also the other ones about, you know, creating vision, the more businessy typical one. So creating vision, communicating well, communicating that vision, and taking decision-making, and being able to direct when necessary. You know, be quite directive. I think there's those ones as well.
Yeah, well, that feedback culture, it's really I like the term you use. It's a culture, right? Because it should be okay in teams and organization to disagree.
Right? Yeah,
no matter if you were the top leader or if you were anywhere in between. It's people that are, especially those that are in the bottom, should feel it's okay for me to step up and say, I see your point, but how about this? And they may be totally right.
Yeah, they might be right. Absolutely. They might be right. I think it builds trust in all directions, really. Yeah.
Yeah. There's an example from this. I forgot his name now. He's a top executive at Netflix, one of the founder. And he thought that allowing people to download videos was a mistake, and he would not allow people to do that. But you know, in Netflix, they had this culture of, it's okay to disagree, it's okay to provide feedback, and and he thought it was not people would never want to download. Why would you want to download? You wanna watch it live? But turns out that he was wrong, and he realized that he was wrong and let people download. Today, I think it's some 15% to 18% of Netflix content are watched offline. People in the air or people somewhere in the woods, and right. You were also talking about power of or the ability to delegate. So maybe hard for some to delegate. And how do you balance between, all right, this task I'm going to delegate to an individual or to a team, and then just turning your back and trusting things are going to be done, versus, all right, I'm delegating, but I'm monitoring to see if it's gonna happen.
Yeah, and I think you raise a really interesting point there. I mean, it's ability to know and understand the people around you, isn't it? So making a decision to delegate to somebody, you then need to assess what the situation is in which you're delegating. So am I delegating to somebody very experienced who has got, you know, lots of experience doing this particular job, in which case maybe I just need to monitor what's happening, you know, or offer help where it's needed? Or does somebody need coaching or mentoring to be able to complete this task? And it's sort of balancing those opportunities, isn't it? To be able to delegate, what does this person need? But I think ultimately it's the belief that I believe this person can do this, maybe with help, maybe with less help, maybe with just monitoring. But what do I need to provide them with in this particular time? And I think that's quite empowering to individuals, you know, to say, maybe at the beginning, I would like you to do this piece of work. This is within the remit of your role. What help do you need? You know, do you want to go off and do it and ask for help when you need, or do you want me to coach and mentor you? You know, the ability to really make decisions like that when you're delegating, I think, but ultimately believing that your people can deliver what you need them to deliver.
Oh, it will really depend then on the individual and the circumstance, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Another hot topic is, of course, time management. And so what kind of tips and tricks can you bring for us on that?
Well, you're right. It's such a topic that we talk about a lot. And I think really what we mean with time management is really, how can I be more effective with my time? Because I think the older I get anyway, and the more responsibilities I have in my life, the more I wish I had more, you know, I had more time. So I think it's really about being more effective with the time that we've got, and therefore prioritizing the tasks that we've got ahead of us. And I'm sure lots of your listeners will have heard of the urgent and important discussion. And I think it might have been Eisenhower, one of the presidents. I think Eisenhower first talked about urgent and important. And I think if we can think in those terms, it can really help us to prioritize the things that we need to do. So a task that's important has valuable outcome, you know, so it's a valuable thing that's worthwhile doing. Something that's urgent just needs to be done quickly, right? So if we can choose, you know, which tasks we want to do on that basis. So something that's very important and very urgent is worth doing, and it's worth doing quickly. If something's very urgent but not important, it's probably somebody else's problem. You know, somebody else has given us that job to do. If something's not urgent and not important, it's probably wasting your time to do it. So really what we want to get to is we want to be working on the things that are just really important, you know, and not necessarily urgent. And I think to be able to get there, doing the things that are really valuable use of our time, we have to know where it is we're trying to get to. So it comes back to this kind of self-awareness thing, Daniel, around what is it that I really want to be doing? What direction do I really want to be going into? So say, for example, somebody is trying to develop a particular skill that is going to get them to a particular role. You know, the thing that would be really important for them would be to working on developing that skill. But of course, that's not particularly urgent, is it? So if we can prioritize our tasks based on the things that are important to us, we'll get where we want to go in the sort of over the longer term. But of course, context is really important to that in this discussion. So maybe, you know, sometimes the things that are important to you are the things that are your own goals. But sometimes the things that are important are the things that are important to your organization. So if you're trying to move on in a role, trying to have impact in a role, knowing what's really important to that delivery of that role, and you know how you can do those impactful things. So it comes back to knowing what's important to you or to the organization and trying to do those things, prioritizing and doing those things. I think once you've done that, there are other kind of more sort of tactical things that we can do. Like, I don't know if you've heard of the Pomodoro technique, which is doing 25 minutes of focus work on a task and then having a 5 minute break, and then doing another 25 minutes worth of activity on a task and then having a break. And that's really using our brain's ability to focus for a short amount of time, really using that to our benefit. And I think that one is a useful one, particularly if you're trying to do something difficult. You know, if you're trying to do something that's hard, focusing on it for a short period of time can be really useful. Time blocking is another one. So if you've got multiple tasks, multiple important things to do, doing a bit each day or kind of blocking days of time to do so you can try and work on multiple things can be useful. I think another thing, another tip is to be reflective and work out when you are most productive on certain tasks. Mm-hmm. So for me, for example, if I need to do really deep work, I need to do it first thing in the morning. You know, I need to get down and get that done, get some of that work first thing in the morning, and then I can do emails at a less productive time of the day. I think so, learning when, what time of day you're particularly productive on certain things is another tip.
That's awesome. And so for that, when you think about that prioritization matrix, it previously you talked about understanding what's the vision, what's the mission of the organization, right? So, and being useful yourself. So the more you understand what's valuable for the organization and for your career, the easier, I guess, will be to prioritize what's that, what's important, urgent, and the different combinations, right?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. Yep.
All right. And so talking about how do I get better at leadership? How do I get better at time management, right? So thinking about personal development, is it something individuals should look for and set time and, you know, read books, go to workshops, do things like that on their own? Or do organizations need to help people with that? How do we help people to get better at these things?
I think you've made a really good point there, right at the beginning of what you just said about creating time. I think it's really important to make time for your own development. We talked a bit earlier about being reflective. And I think if you can build in time to your week to be reflective, think about the things that are happening. How did I feel about them? Was it good? Was it bad? What do I need to do next? So building in time for that reflection, either into your week or into your project cycle. So if you're working on a project and, you know, building in some reflective time at the end, how can I work on my strengths again next time? How can I prevent the things that didn't go so well from happening next time? So it's learning from your experiences as you go. I think, you know, finding learning opportunities, again, back to the self-awareness, that will help you in the things that you want to develop. So I love reading. I also love podcasts. I'm here. It's great to be on one, but also listening to them. I find those such useful sources of information. But not everybody likes those, listening to podcasts all the time. I listen to a lot. So finding other sources of information is great. But I think, you know, there is evidence to show that as adults, we learn best through experience. So all of this learning and also, you know, organizations do so much in leadership development often, you know, workshops, webinars, making these sorts of things available, formal programs, mentoring, coaching often, if you can build in real life experiences alongside those learning opportunities, the better, I think. So, you know, if you if you're starting a project, so you're having some experience in a particular area, and you know that there's a part of that project that's going to be challenging for you, you know, maybe at the same time, listening to some podcasts about that, and then building that into your experience. So trying to learn as you're going through a particular experience, or, you know, the other way around, if there's a particular leadership skill that you want to develop, asking your organization, do you have a project that would help me practice that? You know, I think that's one of the things. And you asked about organizations. You know, I think that's a key one, you know, giving people opportunities to stretch themselves, to grow, and to perhaps have mentorship and coaching while they do that, so they can reflect on that experience, is really important, really good opportunities.
So in other words, don't wait for your organization. I mean, if you are a leader of an organization, you can do something, but if you're just part of it, just don't sit back and wait, just go do something, right? You mentioned a lot of different things you can do, from listening to podcasts, to books, to just seeking help.
And you know, it's interesting. I often, as organizations, you know, most big organizations have leadership development programs or offer that kind of training. And sometimes as in these big organizations, what we tend to do is we tend to select carefully the people that we want to send on leadership training. Because you know, the number sometimes limited. I heard a really interesting perspective recently about how organizations could make their leadership development somewhat self-selecting. You know, so can you make some leadership training open to everybody? You know, maybe some webinars or some kind of open access leadership development, because then you'll find people who are interested in leadership that perhaps you hadn't recognized as an organization. So I think, you know, there's organizations do a lot often, but, you know, perhaps we could make these leadership training opportunities open to a wider set of people.
That's awesome. And what else your in terms of your closing remarks here for our audience on leadership that we haven't talked about so far?
Oh, I think we've talked about so much, Daniel. There's so much.
Yes, it was good.
The couple of things we've talked about around making time for your own development, trying to build early on opportunities to be reflective. You know, we talked about learning. There is so much out there about reflective models. You know, what tools can I use? And, you know, I can share it in the show notes if you have some. You know, University of Edinburgh has a really nice little bit of website content around, you know, encouraging you to be reflective in your career. So, you know, building those skills and those habits as soon as you can I was talking to some students at Nottingham last week, you know, when you're in career transition, those are quite often really brilliant times to ask for feedback, you know, feedback from job opportunities. If you're new in a role, feedback from your management, you know, or at any point in a role. But I think those reflective opportunities, building that skill, building that ability to coach yourself and be resilient, as you mentioned earlier,
right,
I think are super important. Yeah.
Don't be afraid to ask. Just talk, right?
Yeah.
Ask.
Yeah.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. FeedFlow. Feed is too expensive to ignore. Take control with FeedFlow. MetaFarms, transforming agriculture with data-driven solutions for pork producers. SUNY, we provide value-added biotech solutions. Eastman works with you to accelerate your nutritional program innovation. Anatox, research shows that feed sanitizers reduce the onset of viruses in commercial swine feed. Improve swine productivity through powerful pathogen control with Anatox today. We have a time and labor-saving product for you. AgriSlats by Healthy Farms is your solution. No more lugging jugs around the barn every month. With AgriSlats, you simply drop the slat through the floor twice a year, and it works to break down solids, reduces crusting and forming. To learn more, visit myhealthyfarms.com.
End of this podcast here in Swine It. People have three questions right? And those are the first one is, what's your favorite agriculture-related book that you want to share, book or resource that you want to share?
Okay. Yeah. Oh, these are surprise questions. I should have known that because I listened to a couple of episodes before, so I should have known this.
We're in this spot here.
I read a book. There's a journalist in the UK called George Monbiot, and he's quite controversial. And he published a book 2 years ago, I think, called Regenesis. And it's really making the position for the future of agriculture, really, what the future of agriculture should be globally and global food systems as well. And he is controversial, but I think that book was really thought-provoking. I didn't agree with a lot of what he was saying. I agreed with some of it. But I think that, you know, the challenges that agriculture faces around the environment, you know, food miles, those sorts of things, I think it was really thought-provoking. So I recommend that to your listeners.
Yeah, sometimes all we need is just to go a little bit outside the box. So if it's thought-provoking, it's let's think about that, right? How about outside the agriculture? What's your favorite book or resource outside the agriculture?
Mm-hmm. We've talked a lot today about self-awareness, and there is a brilliant, brilliant book by an American psychologist called Tasha Urich, and I hope I've pronounced her name correctly. And that book's called Insight. And I think that's a really, really brilliant, very, very accessible, very readable. I read it really quickly. Look at how to build our own self-awareness. And there's a lot in there about feedback culture. So that one's one of my favorites.
All right. And the last one here, but not least, and certainly has everything to do with what we just talked about here, is, in your opinion, what sets successful professionals apart from those that are not?
Oh, I suppose it depends on what your definition of success is, Daniel. What do you mean by success?
I would say, in general, people that are raise up to leadership positions that raise up to doing impactful work that would positively impact the field.
Yeah. I think, again, that self-awareness and growth mindset, I think, you know, what do I want? How do I have impact? And how do I get there? How do I listen to the people around me, listen to myself, and, you know, bring that self-awareness, which is going to help me grow? I think, you know, a growth mindset, that feeling that I might not succeed in everything I do, but even if I don't, I can learn something from the places where I'm not as successful. You know, so everything is a learning opportunity. I think having that growth mindset can help people be successful in that traditional sense. I think if you think about success in a more holistic sense, so I think, you know, as a society, we could think about success more in terms of happiness. You know, being successful is about being really happy. It's not necessarily about being the most senior leader or being CEO in our organization. It's about having a, you know, happy life. And I think probably the people are happiest are the ones that know what they want, you know, who know what they want, and that might be a leadership role, or it might not be. It might be something else.
Mm-hmm. It's all up to you then, right?
Yeah, and if you know what you want, you can try and get it, can't you? So, it depends on what you measure as success is, I suppose.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Well, with that, that's all about we had for today. Thank you very much. And for the listeners, I guess we'll see you next time.
Yeah, that's great. It's really great to talk to you, Daniel. I really appreciate the opportunity.
Looking to elevate your brand and captivate audiences through the power of podcasting? Look no further. Introducing the custom podcast brought to you by Wisemetics, where we take care of the behind the scenes so that you can focus on what truly matters. Podcasting has become an invaluable tool for brand awareness, but let's face it, putting it into practice can be a daunting task. It's incredibly time-consuming and requires technical know-how. But don't worry, we've got you covered. With our experienced team at The Help, we'll handle the operational aspects so you can channel your energy into what your company does best. Are you ready to unleash the podcasting potential of your company? Schedule a call with one of our specialists today at the link in the bottom of this episode. You'll also receive a free podcast strategy consult tailored to the unique needs and goals of your business.